Is it okay to use the phone, Del?
Oh, sure.
Oh, thanks. I hate to bother you, but old Gus decided to stay home today, and I have this extremely important phone call. Hey, Mike, Edie Harlow. Oh, you're sweet. Look, 10 on Handy Andy in the first at Ormond. Do I still have time? Oh, just. Okay, on the nose.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the sport of kings. And what a great show on tap today. Laura Wohlers, trainer of Eclipse Award-winning sprinter Run Happy, will join me on the program. And, of course, we're on the eve of Super Saturday that is comprised of three Kentucky Derby prep races, the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass Stakes, and the Santa Anita Derby, and I'm going to look at them all. But before I get to any of this, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can't. Yes.
The big showdown in the Sunshine State took place last Saturday, the Florida Derby, and it matched undefeated Mo Heyman, who was the even odds favorite, against Nyquist, who was the juvenile champion, Breeders' Cup juvenile winner. And it was a very interesting race that went a little something like this.
Around the far turn, and here's the battle. It is Nyquist in front, and Mo Heyman has moved up into second on the outside, and the two of them will come toward the top of the stretch together. Three quarters in one, 11-1, and they're into the stretch, and it's Nyquist and Mo Heyman in their bicoastal battle at the top of the stretch. On the inside is Majesto in third. Nyquist has moved away. Mo Heyman has no answer today. On the inside is Majesto, and then comes Fellowship. Nyquist drifting out to the center of the track, but he's far in front. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Florida Derby. Majesto was second. Fellowship was third. Mo Heyman settles for fourth. And Sawyer's Mickey was fifth. And a final time of 1 minute 49.11 seconds.
I'll tell you what, I am really looking forward to this year's Kentucky Derby because I think there are so many intriguing storylines. And the most intriguing storyline to me out of the Florida Derby is the pace figures. Now, I've talked about my pace figures before. The early speed rations, that's a measurement of early energy disbursement, is not necessarily speed, but the lower the figure, the better. Generally, you want very negative figures here. The LSR, or late speed rations, are a measurement of late energy distribution, disbursement, however you want to put it. And there you want the higher figures. The figures here: a -6 ESR for Nyquist, who went wire to wire in this race, and a -6 LSR. A lot was made about the fact that he drifted in the stretch. People saying, hey, he got tired. He's probably not going to be able to go the 10 furlongs. I've had doubts about Nyquist all along. And by the way, that's the other thing that's kind of funny in the aftermath of the Florida Derby is everybody's coming out now. Well, I told you so. Yeah, all you people who doubted him, look what he did to Mo Heyman. Yeah, but this isn't the Kentucky Derby. These are prep races. And it's always funny that people start gloating just a little bit too early. Nyquist absolutely looked impressive. And I don't know if I put much stock in the drifting out. You know, I really believe handicappers have to focus on what they're good at. I am not a visual handicapper. I heard a bunch of people say, too, that he didn't change leads. Nyquist didn't change leads. I can't spot a lead change. And I had a guy work with me on this. Literally work with me. Sent me some tapes. I can't see it. So I don't put a lot of stock in things that I can't evaluate. But the numbers do speak very loudly here. Remember that the PAR, ESR, in the Kentucky Derby is about a -9 or -10. So we're looking at about 3 to 4 lengths faster than what Nyquist did in the Florida Derby. In fact, Nyquist really had everything his own way in this race. The LSR is very, very good. A minus six LSR in the Florida Derby. That's solid. But can Nyquist do the same thing when the pressure is ratcheted up? This has been the question about Songbird. We're going to talk a little bit about the Santa Anita Oaks later. There are some factors in Nyquist's past performances that greatly concern me, and I'll talk about those later as we get closer to the Kentucky Derby. But I was not as impressed as the rest of the media world was with Nyquist's win. And here's the other thing about this that you have to keep in mind. And we've been fortunate recently because we've seen a lot of real formful Kentucky Derbies. So people are kind of feeling their oats now. And you're going to hear about how great this horse is and what an idiot you were for not spotting it. But you play Nyquist on the first Saturday in May, maybe you get 4-1, 5-1, I think, at the outside. Now, I'm not great at predicting odds, but you're going to get a low price. That's the other thing that comes into play, is how low do you go? You know, you're gloating if the horse wins at 6-5. Now, I don't think you're going to see that by any stretch on Kentucky Derby Day. But my point is, you're going to take a lower price, and I think there are some knocks against this horse. Mo Heyman, we'll talk about him on a later date, but that was not what you want to see. It's one thing to regress, and there are even some questions as to whether Mo Heyman regressed that badly, because a lot of people have been talking about this horse kind of leveling off and not really showing any kind of progression. So there's even question about whether he regressed at all, but it's just not the kind of performance you want to see as your final prep.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. Clue, it's probably not going to be P. Diddy, but he's on the list of betting options. And if you're a racing fan like me, you'll love the daily menu and special prop bets. Thoroughbred racing, check. International racing, check. Greyhound racing, check. Harness racing, check. Generous rebates, checkmate. USRacing.com also has a wide variety of casino games as well. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
I'm now joined by Laura Wohler. She is the trainer of Run Happy and possibly the most hated person in racing. First of all, good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
I'm joking about you being the most hated person in racing, but you know, I read some of these posts and I knew the minute we had the Breeders' Cup debacle that there was kind of a target on your guys' back with Run Happy. Why do you think there is so much negative press out there, and does it bother you?
I mean, certainly the only reason there's a lot of negative press out there is because of the fact that it was taken to social media. You know, you have a lot of people that lose horses all the time from, you know, positions, whether they're a private trainer that lose a job or whether they're a public trainer, people take horses. Even right after the Breeders' Cup, I think there's two or three horses that were taken that nobody talks about. But I think that the only reason you hear a lot about that and it's become such a dramatic thing that people want to delve into is because of the fact that it was taken to social media. Does it bother me? Well, I really just don't read it. I mean, it just doesn't concern me. I'm not a big social media person. I don't even have a Twitter account. And so I just don't let that bother me. I'm just going to focus on our job and, you know, keeping Run Happy, happy and safe. And that's all that matters.
Now, one of the things I saw, of course, Run Happy had a minor injury, minor setback, and will not be running on Kentucky Derby Day. And one of the things I saw is, you know, the amount of money that James McInvale has lost and the, you know, all the different trainers and so forth. And I tried to point out because, you know, see, I'm not really like you. It does kind of bother me when there's stuff out there that I don't think makes sense. And, you know, racing, anybody who gets into racing to make a lot of money is generally in the wrong field. And I just did an article. I talked about Eugene Klein. And Eugene Klein, known as one of the great owners of all time, he took a bath in terms of, you know, on the track. This doesn't count breeding, but of course, Run Happy hasn't been bred yet. So just on the track. How do you get that across to people that, look, you know, even with all these, you know, we have all these different stables now with people coming in and they're buying a share of a racehorse. And I've had people ask me about this. And I always say, look, it's a lot of fun. I think it's something that would be fun to do, but don't expect to make money on it.
I think it's hard to get that across to people. I think the first thing to remember is that this has always been called the sport of kings. And that's probably for a reason. You know, you have to have a kingdom of money to stay in it and not have to get your money elsewhere. And how many horse people, with the exception of, like you said, breeders, are out there that are supporting their racing business off of the income from the racing business? Not many. Most of the owners that are out there that have horses, whether they're a good horse or whether they're in the claiming game, a lot of them have a secondary business or actually their major primary business that they are supporting their horse venture by having another business to support it in a financial way. There are some, I think, people in the claiming game that if you have a good trainer that's very good at doing claiming, which there's a lot out there, that claim you horses and turn them right and, you know, get rid of the bad ones and they can improve a few for you and, you know, kind of get, you know, that going, I think you can make a little bit of money at. But if you're going into it like Mac is, and many owners are, that they want to go and win those big races like the Derby or the Breeders' Cup or, you know, those grade one or graded stakes and have the big horse, I think that they are probably going to, most of them, tell you that there's been most of the time that they're having to supplement any income with their own income.
Now, I got to ask you, Laura, because you're, of course, James's sister-in-law, so your sister is married to James. When I go out to the racetrack, my wife hates gambling. So if I go out to the racetrack, she's not pleased. I wonder how your sister feels about about James spending all this money on racehorses.
Well, Linda would definitely like for them to get out of the horse racing business. She's not really that involved. I mean, she does enjoy the good horse when we get a good horse, and we do talk her into coming to the races sometimes. You know, it is a lot of money that's spent, and a lot of people, you know, we kind of laugh because one time, I'll tell you a short story, Mac and we were taking Linda off of the ownership papers, actually, because she really didn't care, and we had to license both of them all the time, so we decided we'd just run into Mac's thing. And so she had to write a letter to the, we were running a horse in Louisiana, we had to write a letter to the stewards, and so Mac had written a letter, and he said, in the middle of the letter, he said, well, you know, my wife's getting, you know, giving up the ownership of these because she really doesn't like the racehorsing industry, but that's a whole other business, okay? She would have me out of it. And they thought it was so funny that they hung it on the bulletin board at the racing office for everybody to read.
I love it.
She is not very much into us losing all this money in the horse business. You know, it's a tough business. I don't know. I mean, we know that Run Happy will hopefully, you know, be a, you know, good stallion, and maybe he'll make some money back with that. But, you know, we certainly, even with his earnings, are not going to be able to pay all the bills that we've lost over the years. And of course, we've been in it since 95. So it's been a long stretch. It isn't like we got in this 4 or 5 years ago.
Let's turn our attention to Run Happy, because the thing that I was always so impressed with, I get criticized for this, but I always talk about, you know, I go to the gym a lot and I look at training and I look at the way training has progressed in bodybuilding, in all other sports. And then I look at horse racing and there's nothing that's really changed other than we're racing the horses less and less, which no less an authority than H. Allen Jerkins often wondered about. Where did James come up with the approach? Because I know that's behind a lot of the trainers. You know, people talk about, well, he's fired all these trainers. Well, they're not doing things the way he wants it done. He has a specific way of doing things. Why is he not listening to the experts in horse racing that tell him what he's doing is wrong?
As far as the fact that we like to do things ourselves in a different manner, yes, that's true. Mac has always felt like he likes to train harder. We have a very hard training program with our horses, and we're not going to back away from that or shy away from that. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It may be different than some people. And I'm not, you know, I mean, people go and, you know, say, if we breeze a horse 6 furlongs like Run Happy did in 109 and 4 before the Breeders' Cup, we've got everybody in the United States bad-mouthing us. Bob Baffert does that all the time. He's a great trainer, okay? Well-respected trainer. Nobody would say anything if he did that. They would just say his horse works great. So I think a lot of it is just that Mac has bucked the norm in the business in some ways. And, you know, that doesn't make people happy. And, you know, I mean, as far as, you know, are we taking advice from the experts? Well, you know, this is kind of one of those businesses where one day you're doing great and the next day you're doing horrible. So I think there's been every trainer that's had a time in their life that they're on the downside of that hill rather than the up. So I think that, you know, that's kind of, you know, who do you consider to be the expert, you know, kind of question to me.
Yeah, and you know, I was kind of pointing everything towards what James was doing, but obviously you're a huge, huge part of this. I guess I wonder, too, where you guys got the ideas from. Because, again, the idea of conditioning a horse, and this has been a frustration for me when I write about racing. I've got a lot of different databases, and I talk about the fact that, look, the statistics do not support the fact that horses are winning more often off of layoffs. And there's so much stuff like that in racing, and it just becomes accepted as truth. One of my favorite and horse racing author by the name of Barry Meadow debunked this as well. You often hear horses breaking from the rail if they're young, that they don't do as well. Well, statistically, that's just not true. But try to get that across to people. So how did you come up with these ideas in terms of, you know, a more rigorous workload? Because I've heard you guys talk about the fact that you want to kind of simulate race conditions. Of course, back in the day, what was different is that they often used the races as workouts. And obviously, you're working hard in those races, you know, as they prep for various stakes races and so forth. How did you come up with the idea? Did it come from the old timers, or was it something that you just kind of had this inkling that this might work?
Well, I think there's probably two things with that. Okay. Yes, if you do look back at how they raced horses and they ran horses many, many years ago, that it would be something that I do think that Mac leans back on and says, look at how they trained these horses many years ago. Okay. And these horses, you know, went out there and flourished and did well. And honestly, I mean, if we did what they did back years ago, like the old timers did, like you were saying, using races, I mean, my God, I think Spectacular Bid like one ran a race one day and then like 4 days later ran another one. You know, I mean, if we did that, oh my God. I mean, could you imagine the presence that was,
that
was
yes.
the case? Well, you know, and I think that Mac would probably say, oh, run happy every 2 weeks. But I don't think that that's very good, okay, in the aspect that sometimes in order to be winning, you need to be peaking those horses, you know, and getting them to where they're really on the muscle again, on the bit again, wanting to go. And sometimes you can, you know, get them too much out of that. I think as far as us training the way we do and that we believe in training hard, I think the biggest reason is because Mac used to be an athlete. And so Mac played football and he played other sports and he's known lots of sports people and still does. And there's no other sport in the world that they do not train, okay, almost as hard as they play, you know, or they participate. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they're doing two-a-days in football, you know. So, you know, I think that in Mac's theory is that why would you take a horse out and breeze him two, you know, three furlongs and then expect him to go out there and run six, you know? Or why would you take a horse out and breeze him five furlongs at most and put him in a mile 16th race, you know? Are people successful at it? Absolutely. Okay. Do you win first time out like that often? Probably not. You know what I mean? And, you know, do you win a lot of races off that kind of training? Maybe, maybe not. I think that, you know, of course, I'll be the first to tell you that it's number one, the horse. You know, for some reason, we don't maybe have as good of horses as we had back many, many years ago when we had a ton of those horses that were out there running that are still in everybody's minds and, you know, or the Kelsos and all those horses that ran for so long and so wonderfully. You know, maybe the breed has changed a little bit, but I just think that, you know, you have to understand the first one is the horse. I train all my horses as hard as I train Run Happy. Few of them train harder, maybe, that are going longer. Nobody talks about them because they don't go out and breathe in 57 or 109 and 4.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Run Happy, because I mentioned, I think it was last year, I think I was talking to Mac's daughter, Laura, and she made the statement that the goal for Run Happy was the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now, I know you guys missed this race at Churchill Downs, so the Met Mile is next on the docket. Are you still looking, as possibly anyway, the Breeders' Cup as the ultimate goal for this horse?
Probably next year, okay? I think our goal that we had spoken about was making him into what we would consider him to be a champion miler this year. And in order to do that, I would say that he would need to win the Met Mile and then the Breeders' Cup Mile and probably the Cigar Mile. But at least the two you know, Breeders' Cup and the Met Mile would, you know, definitely make him into a champion miler. And, you know, then we were going to the next year stretch him out to go the mile in eighth. And, of course, everything's going to depend on race to race. I mean, mm-hmm. as somebody that has been in this industry long enough and trained long enough, you go race by race also to see how he responds. You know, I do think that he's going to run well going a mile for sure, because of the fact that we breezed him and had him gallop out miles in less than 1:36. So I do think that he can go and compete in stake level quality at a mile, and that's to be seen, but we believe that's the case. I do think that with some of the evaluations we've done on his stride and such, that he will go a mile and a quarter. But I think that's to be seen also, you know. So I think that we will probably this year concentrate for the Breeders' Cup mile, and then we'll probably try to do the Classic the next year, you know, as long as he's staying sound. With, you know, we want to keep him running for 2 years and let the fans follow him.
I saw that with California Chrome, and it reminded me, because a lot of times I feel, a recent article I wrote, I talk about not really feeling the same level of fandom that I did when I was younger. And I think a lot of it is just these horses aren't racing. And it was great to see California Chrome, you know, continue to race. It's great to hear that Run Happy will continue to race. Let me ask you this, in terms of the Met Mile, how much does missing this start at Churchill Downs hurt? You know, that's obviously a very prestigious race, a really tough race. Can he win it off of that kind of a layoff?
I think he can, okay, if he's training well. I mean, and understand that even though that's our biggest goal this year, has always been the Met Mile, we won't run if we don't think he's ready. I mean, we do not do that. We do feel like we aren't going to run off horse unless we know, we feel confident they're going to go into the race and come out of the race sound because they were prepared to do the race. So it's put us back some. You know, I think that with the you know, with the Met Mile, if we have to train into it, we will. I mean, Go Sapper did it. He won the Met with a 6-month layoff. And I think that, you know, we can do it. I think this horse is good to do it. When he starts training, we're going to know whether he can do it. It's kind of like when we went to the King Bishop. You know, we went and breezed him seven furlongs. And we breezed him a couple 7 furlongs, okay, 2 or 3 previous to the King Bishop. And in that one of those, I knew that he needed to run a 1:21 to win the King Bishop. And so when he did a 7-furlong breeze over Keeneland, basically in hand with Edgar on him, and he never asked him, and he went in 1:22 and 3, you stop and say, could he do that, you know, second faster on race day, adrenaline, the track, et cetera. You know, I feel like you're never going to go maybe race specific time in the morning, but we felt like that he was prepared when we saw that to go out there and run in the Met. So I'm going to be the King's Bishop. So I'll be the same way with the Met, in the aspect that we will make sure that we think that he is ready to go out there and win that race before we just go and throw him in that race. And if we can get a prep beforehand, we'll try to.
Very good.
You know, we'll just look and see if there's something there to, you know, we prefer a prep.
Yeah.
But we'll see. No, we'll see how it comes up time-wise, you know.
How's he doing right now?
He's doing well right now. He's, you know, he's jogging right now. We're going to start him galloping again next week. And he's stayed very fit. He hasn't really stopped training. He's still been jogging. Gave him a few days off here and there just to kind of let this bruise inflammation kind of, you know, die down, okay, so that he, you know, wasn't uncomfortable. We certainly aren't going to train him if he's, you know, not hurting, you know, we're not going to do that to him. So, but he's been training and he's jogging, and, you know, we'll give him another 4 or 5 days of jogging. We'll start galloping him and see how he does galloping. And, you know, if he's comfortable and he seems happy, we'll go on with him and get him heading to his next race.
All right, Laura, now we're going to put the focus on you. It is time for the random question segment.
That's so random.
You want answers?
What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how.
Lucy, why don't you answer me?
You're not a eunuch, are you?
You all know about death.
Do you have any marijuana I might be able to buy from you?
Is it true that you're in the middle of a nervous breakdown?
Who said that? Why do you say you feel trapped in a man's body?
That marijuana question, by the way, here in Colorado, very common these days. So let me ask you these. These are just fun questions off the web. So now, I don't know your marital status, but the first question I have you ever had 2 dates in one night?
No, I haven't.
Well, that was short and sweet. All right.
Sorry, I wish I could expound on that, but I haven't.
No, if you haven't, that's what I'm saying. These questions are kind of funny because some are just so incredibly odd. In fact, this next one is, you know, I don't know what this tells us, but how do you like your eggs?
How do I like my eggs? Poached, preferred.
All right. And do you like scary movies?
No.
And let's see. Let's get the last random question here. Now, see, this makes no... I'm going to read this to you just to show you what I have to go through with these. What is a good distance for an app between people? I don't even know what this means. So we'll leave it there, Laura.
What is a good distance for a what between people?
For an app. That it makes no sense to me. So anyway, we'll leave that where it is. I want to thank you very much for your time today. And I'm going to be one of the few maybe wishing you all the best in the future and certainly the best for Run Happy.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Derek.
All right. Take care. Grab your PPs, everybody. It is time to handicap. Of course, PPs, short for past performances. And I haven't done a handicapping segment in a long time. And one of the big reasons is I can never find the time to actually handicap. Now, I will say that I didn't find a whole lot of time for today's show either, but I did run all my reports and I've got at least some statistics, some facts to share. Let us start off with the Wood Memorial. This is at Aqueduct on Saturday, where Shagoff is the 2-1 favorite on the strength of his very strong performance in the Gotham.
As they hit the top of the stretch, Lauban trying to see it out, turning for home in front. Sunny Ridge on the outside to the attack. Shagoff swings wide for the stretch, drive two. Adventus is coming down the center of the track as well. 1 furlong left. Lauban down inside, narrow lead. Sunny Ridge fights on. Shagoff keeps on grinding away. So to Adventus on the far outside. 16th to go. Lauban's trying to see it out. 16th left. Here comes Shagoff with a final surge. A final surge to win the Gotham. Shagoff the winner. Lauban was second. Adventus was third. And Sunny Ridge was fourth.
Now, here's what I find interesting. Everybody talked about Nyquist and the way he drifted out in the Florida Derby, yet there was no talk of the drifting out that Shagoff did in the Gotham. In Shagoff's case, I think it was more severe in the sense that the pace figures back up the fact that this horse was flat out tired. Now, he's 2-1 on the morning line, and I hate him. Shagoff, I just don't think looks good in this spot, and here's why. The last ESR, minus 10, that's very, very good. However, the projected pace in this race is a minus 8 ESR. So perhaps a bit of a breather for Shagoff, but remember, Shagoff isn't going to be on the lead. And the LSR in the Gotham, a minus 14. Shagoff got a beautiful trip, stalking, coming out in the stretch, and yet he just looked tired. Now, I've seen a lot of Wood winners that actually stagger to the finish. In fact, with all the hoopla over Uncle Mo and what he's done as a sire, holy smokes, when he ran in the Wood, he was running on fumes. And I think that's one of the reasons, by the way, that a lot of people are concerned that Uncle Mo progeny, the progeny of Uncle Mo, will not get a mile and a quarter. I don't know if that can be related, but nonetheless, Uncle Mo was definitely staggering when he ran in the Wood. Shagoff's figures just don't back it up for a 2-1 favorite. And again, you know, I always talk about price because that's a big part of it. If you give me 20-1 on Shagoff, I might be looking at some of the positives and think, hey, you know, this is a horse that's relatively fast. He ranks pretty highly in both overall speed and ESRs. I think he's got to be given a shot. 20-1 is too high. Well, conversely, you give me 2-1 and I look at it, a horse that, hey, the LSRs are not great. He ranks 6th overall in this field out of 8. The last race, especially not good. That might have been a peak effort. I can't take 2-1 on this horse. I put the fair odds at 7-2 and he's the horse that I would be trying to beat in this field. Again, if he beats me, hey, take the 680, take the $6, whatever. It doesn't really matter that much. Adventus. Now, Adventus was actually disadvantaged by Shagoff drifting out last time. He was the horse on the immediate outside of Shagoff, and he's kind of a shy type to begin with. There's a couple of, you know, those comments in his running line, which does not bode well for the first Saturday in May in a field of 20. But nonetheless, Adventus in this race, I think, could possibly move forward. He's 10-1 on the morning line. I make him 8-1, and I would give him a strong look because, again, I think he might offer a decent price. Trojan Nation is next. He's 30-1 on the morning line. For some of these horses, because there are three races to look at, I'm going to go fairly quickly. If I overlook a horse, I apologize. Trojan Nation, there's not a lot to recommend here. He's still a maiden. He's 30-1 on the morning line. I don't think he's horrible, but the speed figures don't fit. 25-1, I think fair on Trojan Nation. Tale of Saval, 20-1 on the morning line. This horse won his very first race, broke his maiden at Saratoga, so that's great. Came back in the Champagne, set the pace, faded, didn't run particularly well, and then came back in the Tampa Bay Derby and was nowhere. Had some trouble at the start, though, so maybe he improves a little bit in this spot. When I see horses that ran well once and then were kind of pitched in over their head, I'm willing to give them an excuse. But again, I'm not going to take a short price. The interesting thing here is on my win factor line, that's my computerized fair odds line, 10-1 fair odds on Tale of Saval. Flexibility, I think, is very, very interesting. Now, you've got the 70-day layoff, which I don't quite understand, but this horse has pretty good LSRs. I think could be in a good position here. He's raced well in top company. 8-1 on the morning line, I think, is too high. 9-2. Is a fair price, I believe, on Flexibility. Matt King Cole, I think, should be the favorite in this field. He's wired the two races that he's won, so you always are concerned about what happens if he doesn't get the lead, and that is a possibility with Outwork on the outside, that Outwork might gun and Matt King Cole might decide to rate, and we don't know how he's going to perform if he rates. But if he gets the lead, and he could, he looks the best in here. Best last race speed figure. Just a lot of talent with this horse. And he's, you know, certainly a better 3-1 shot than Shagoff is a 2-1 shot. Dalmore is next. He's 12-1 on the morning line. This horse is interesting because for the bulk of his career, six races, he's run seven times total. For six races, he was horrible. The ESRs were okay, but the LSRs were terrible. Then last time, there was no pace in the race. He stalked, won very impressively with a zero LSR. That is by far his best LSR, and it's the best LSR in the field. Also, he set a career best speed figure, or recorded a career best speed figure. So I got to think that Dalmore might be ready to take another step forward. It's always difficult with these kinds of horses, but I would, again, be keeping an eye on a horse like Dalmore at the right price. I think 8-1 is fair. Outwork, I already mentioned him. Son of Uncle Mo. This horse looks very, very solid on paper. It started his career at Keeneland at 4.5 furlongs, won that race, then went to Tampa Bay Downs in an optional claimer, won that race impressively, and then was second in the Tampa Bay Derby. But here's the problem. He led in that race -2 ESR. There's no way he's going to get that kind of a pace here. He's going to have to run faster. Can he adapt? He does have talent. I just worry with those connections, you're going to get an underlaid price. He's 5-2 on the morning line. I think he's fair at 6-1. So in looking at the wood, my biggest suggestion is to try to beat Shagoff. I think Matt King Cole is probably the best horse in there, but there are some other possibilities at the right price. Let us go on to the Bluegrass Stakes. This is a very large field, so I think what I'll do here is just concentrate on some of the main contenders or some horses that I want to make some points about. Donegal Moon is a Todd Pletcher trainee. He's 5-1 on the morning line. Won his last race by 13.5 lengths. Here's the problem. This is a horse that's very similar to one we just talked about in that for seven races in his career, he wasn't really that great. And then last time he just explodes in a very short field at Parks Racing. In his graded tries, he hasn't been impressive. Now in the Jerome, unfortunately, he fell to his face, lost the jockey, so no running line there, but fifth in both his try in the Withers and the Remsen. So not impressive efforts there. His win came with a very slow pace, and he wired the field. There was a very slow pace last time, and he came off the pace. Now, that's the one thing I like, is that he did sit off the leader and then rally. But the pace was still incredibly slow. There's no way he sees a pace like that today. With the connections here, Donegal Racing has had a pretty good history in the Kentucky Derby. Then you've got Todd Pletcher. I just don't think you get a great price. So I think 10 to 1 is fair on Donegal Moon. A lot of buzz about Cherry Wine until he was fourth in the Rebel last time. And that wasn't a bad effort. This horse has no speed. So if there's a fast pace early, I think he could certainly move up. But 12 to 1, I think, is fair. Those happen to be his morning line odds. Zulu is the 5 to 2 morning line favorite, and for good reason. If you look at the speed figures here, there's nothing close to Zulu. Couple things I wanted to point out, though. He's putting blinkers on. Not really sure why. I mean, I think there was that sense that he didn't really keep his mind on business in the stretch of the Fountain of Youth. But making those kinds of changes close to the Kentucky Derby just doesn't bode well. So I wanted to bring that up for people who like this horse on the Derby trail. And I'll get some stats later, but blinkers off, blinkers on, close to the Derby, just not a great idea. Another Todd Pletcher trainee here. And, you know, it's those kinds of experiments that you just don't want to see. And, of course, not a great base with this horse. This horse broke his maiden at 2 at a 6-furlong distance and then has raced 7 furlongs and a mile and a 16th. He now goes a mile and an 8th in the Bluegrass Stakes. This is the kind of Todd Pletcher horse that I see every year going to the Derby, get bet, and underperform. Just not a fan. And I think this horse has a lot of talent, so I'm not talking about his talent. And I absolutely think he could win the Bluegrass Stakes. Let's see. Let's go on to Brody's Cause. Brody's Cause, big early favorite on the Kentucky Derby trail. Very, very disappointing run in the Tampa Bay Derby. In fact, I don't even know if you can call it a run. He was beaten by 12 and a half lengths, was never part of that race, had a decent pace to run at. I mean, it wasn't super fast, and he just did not perform at all. Can he rebound today? I would say yes, because he's had some past performances that fit. A lot of it depends on how fast the pace will be. The projected pace in the Bluegrass is actually quite brisk, a minus 10 ESR. I think that absolutely helps Brody's Cause. I think he's fair at 5 to 1. Let's talk a little bit about Cards of Stone, because this horse really fits the profile in this race in that he's another front runner. He's out of Bustin' Stones, a sprinter. Last time went wire to wire, won very impressively by 13, but it was a minus 6 ESR. He's not going to get that kind of a pace. And of course, you've always got to wonder with horses like Cards of Stone, can they take their game off the pace? It's an open question. Let us move on to, let's talk a little bit about Star Hill. He was third in the Tampa Bay Derby. He's one of these kinds that is just okay. In fact, even though this race, because of the field size, got a pretty good grade in terms of my key race angle, and that just looks at, you know, different factors to try to predict the key race before it actually happens, and field size definitely is a factor in that, and of course you've got an overflow field here, so it got a pretty good grade, but there's not a lot of talent in this race. It's very, very thin, I think, in terms of talent, or I should put it this way, the talent that's been shown thus far. So Star Hill, 10 to 1 on the morning line. I think he's fair at 15 to 1. My Man Sam is incredibly intriguing. Now, he's shown no speed. It's funny because he's out of a sprinter, albeit a closing sprinter by the name of Trap Shot. And Trap Shot actually was able to stretch his speed too, I should add. But My Man Sam was very impressive in an optional claiming event versus Matt King Cole. My Man Sam was second against him in that optional claimer and came from well off the pace. It was a decent pace in that race, but this is a horse that bears some watching because he's definitely got the speed figures to compete. He could very well get a good pace set up, and so he fits in here. He's 10 to 1 on the morning line. I think he's fair at 8 and maybe even lower than that because, again, the contention in here is almost in levels. You don't see a lot of, you know, really talented horses. You see some horses that might be able to move up. It's an interesting race, a very, very interesting race. So in terms of the Bluegrass overall, I would be looking at Zulu, who I think is a deserved favorite. I mentioned My Man Sam, and I would not be afraid to take some swings in this race because it's the kind of race that is wide open past the main contention. There's a lot of horses that could move up and absolutely fit in this field. I want to talk just briefly about the Santa Anita Oaks and Songbird. Songbird is 1 to 9, once again, on the morning line in the Santa Anita Oaks. And there's some things that I'm seeing that concern me. And so this is why I wanted to talk just briefly about this race. Last time, Songbird recorded a minus 11 ESR. That is the fastest of her career since her debut in a sprint race at Del Mar. The LSR last time, minus 13. That is her second worst since the Del Mar debutante, also a sprint. There's some speed in this race. I want to see what Songbird can do if she's pressured, and that pressure might come from a horse by the name of Forever Darling. Now, Forever Darling has shown quite a bit of speed. In fact, was pretty close up in the Rachel Alexandra. You'll remember we talked about that race, and I talked about how fast the pace was in that race. Well, since that race, Forever Darling is putting on blinkers. If she challenges Songbird early, this race could be very, very interesting. Because the one thing I like to see when a horse goes out and is winning easy, I really like to see those LSRs be better. You know, when Secretariat won the Belmont, his LSR was through the roof. His LSR was great in the Kentucky Derby. Now, I realize we're talking about Secretariat here. Well, American Pharoah in the Belmont, when he got everything his own way early, the LSR was great. That's what I like to see. I'm not seeing that with Songbird. Instead, I'm seeing a lot of unbridled speed. And when she goes to compete in the Kentucky Oaks, that is a different track. That's a different scenario. So I want to see her be able to rate and come home quickly. If Forever Darling goes out and gives her pressure, I think it's going to be a very interesting race. One horse to keep an eye on. And by the way, there is likely to be a negative show pool. And so I strongly advise people to get aboard in terms of betting against Songbird in the show pool. Because if she's out, you get a monster payoff. But even if she's in, with net pool pricing, a lot of times you can get a great price. Look at Bellamentary. That is definitely one horse I would be using in the show spot. She wired her last race, but she's come off the pace in the past and has some pretty good figures. So she's one that I put right in the hunt. Let us talk quickly. I feel like I'm just going on and on, which I am, but there's a lot of races to cover. Let's talk about the Santa Anita Derby, the last race on Super Saturday. Denman's Call broke his maiden fairly impressively at 5.5 furlongs, then ran a couple of sprints, is trying a route for the first time, 15-1 on the morning line. Horses like this are always a tough call. He's a Doug O'Neill trainee. Doug O'Neill is possibly the best trainer at getting horses ready for a route following sprints, which we saw last week in the Florida Derby with Nyquist. So I give Denman's Call a shot just based on that alone. And again, it's sometimes hard to tell what a horse's ability is until you see them actually try a route of ground, or what their ability is at a route of ground or a surface or whatever the case may be until they actually try it. 12-1, I think, is fair on Denman's Call. I want to take a second to talk about Exaggerator. This is the second horse in the field. That last race in the San Felipe, I think, was fantastic. I've talked before about the Kentucky Derby and turn time and being able to move on the turn and just how impressive that is and what a huge factor it has been in the Kentucky Derby. And that is basically looking at the first call to the second call in route races. Exaggerator, 6th out by 8.5 at the first call of the San Felipe. 2nd out by 1.5 at the second call. And everybody remembers that really impressive move. In fact, a lot of people felt Exaggerator moved too quickly. But I tell you what, I love that in terms of his chances in Kentucky. This horse looks very solid to me. When you look at the pace figures, when you look at the speed figures, everything is there. This is a horse that I think absolutely bears watching, and I think could be a value play here in the Santa Anita Derby. There's a part of me that doesn't want him to win, that wants him to finish second or third, but put in another strong move on the turn, you know, just to set him up for Kentucky. So I'm kind of torn from a betting standpoint, but I do think he stands a big shot in here. 7-2, fair odds. Dancing Candy. Now, the projected pace, if I can find it in here, let me go through my stuff here because I got all kinds of papers here. In here somewhere, you will find the projected pace of the Santa Anita Derby. It is a minus 8 ESR. I don't see a lot that can go with Dancing Candy early. In fact, Uncle Lino on the outside, who went with him kind of, sort of, in the San Felipe, is taking the blinkers off. So the idea probably being that they don't want him to be engaged in a pace duel. Last time, Dancing Candy went very fast early and then was able to slow up the pace and take off again. Now, as a Kentucky Derby prospect, I do not like that. In fact, if you look at the stats on the Kentucky Derby, horses that were first at the first call in their last race, not good, like a 0.57 impact value. Now, it's worse when you don't win, so keep that in mind. This is also a horse with 8 Kieran speed points. I've detailed that in the Derby, this has not been a great factor. You generally want to show the ability to rate. So it's really, really tough with Dan Zincandy. He's got a lot of ability. I mean, he earned a minus 11 ESR last time. That is faster than the Derby par. So for horses to outrun him early, they're going to have to work. The interesting thing to see will be, will the horses in this field let him get away with relaxing on the pace? That's going to be the big question. Because last time, Exaggerator tried, and that didn't work out so well. So I think Dan Zincandy, from a pace standpoint, is absolutely in the catbird seat here. What does that mean moving on to Kentucky? That's the question that remains to be answered. 5-2, fair odds on Dan Zincandy. More Spirit is 8-5 on the morning line. He is the favorite. And frankly, I don't get it, because I don't see where he gets the advantage this time around that he didn't have last time around. And in fact, of the three that competed in the San Felipe and made up the top three, I think More Spirit is the weakest of them. But we shall see. He's trained by Bob Baffert, so that's a big, big factor. Bob Baffert known to get these horses ready. But the LSR last time for More Spirit, the worst since he broke his maiden at a sprint. So it was his worst route LSR. Maybe it was just an off day and he will rebound. I don't know. And I don't like to take a short price. I don't like the fact that the horse pulled. I think that's a really bad sign going into the Kentucky Derby. Again, you want to see horses that can relax. You must relax in a 20-horse field with a fast pace, with everything going on the first Saturday in May. So I put the fair odds on More Spirit at 4-1 in the Santa Anita Derby. And looking forward to Kentucky, he's got a few marks against him. Smoky Image had a ton of buzz coming into the San Felipe. He had been undefeated in, for the most part, state-bred company. Did not perform well at all. Can he rebound? Here's an interesting thing to look at. And it's why I drum this home so much when I talk about the Kentucky Derby and I talk about the pace dynamics. In his first 6 races, the fastest that Smoky Image ever went at the first call was a minus 6 ESR, and he was just a half length off in a 5.5 furlong sprint. Last time in the San Felipe, a minus 9 ESR. So it just goes to show you what happens when the pace is ramped up. Oh, and by the way, in the San Felipe, Smoky Image was 4th, off by 2.5 lengths. So put yourself in the horse's mindset, if you can, for a second. And here's a horse that is, you know, expended X amount of energy, and he's right there battling. Now he's expending more energy than he ever has early, and he's further back. You can see where this can play mentally, if not physically. And I don't know if it's always physical. Sometimes I think it is a mental thing. You know, a horse wants to be in a certain position, but he's got to work so hard to get there, and he gives up. That is what it looks like happened to Smoky Image, and it's why I say I really like to see horses in the Kentucky Derby who have demonstrated that they can handle the faster pace. Smoky Image has not, and I just couldn't take a short price on him to prove that. Again, 12-1 I think is fair. He is 15-1 on the morning line, so there's a possibility of a good price in here. Iron Rob is somewhat interesting. Boy, he's raced a ton, 10 starts already, but he's never tried a route. He will try that today. He could put some pressure on the likely race favorite, but his ESRs have not been great. It's going to be interesting. He is the wild card because he's the one that could change the pace dynamics. Dressed in Hermes, 15-1 on the morning line. This horse has been competing mostly on the turf. His 2 dirt tries have not been great. You know, it's always tough to say, can he turn things around in this race? Possibly, but once again, price is everything. 20-1, fair odds. Rare Candy, 1 win in 8 starts. He's been okay, but the speed figures are a little bit light. The pace figures are a little bit light. I think 20-1 is fair. Interesting note on him, he is 12-1 on my win factor line. I already mentioned Uncle Lino. Uncle Lino last time finished 10th. finished fourth in the San Felipe, beaten by 10 lengths, takes the blinkers off. Does that help him improve today? Possibly. Maybe he goes back to going off the pace. He relaxes a little bit. Going forward, though, these kinds of late changes are not great on the Derby trail. So to sum up the Santa Anita Derby, the horse I'm looking at with the most interest is Exaggerator, not only in this race, but also moving forward. Dancing Candy, I think, has some advantages in terms of pace. More Spirit, I just don't think there's any value there, so he might be the horse I would be betting against. Anyway, I hope you all have a great wagering weekend. Remember, check out US Racing for all your racing needs, and I will talk to you again next week.